At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Beck. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, hour two, about 5 minutes in, and thanks to Mark Cassie for the visit, and we'll talk to Wayne Catalano in a little bit. Graham Motion actually just heard from. He's going to pause us and delay till tomorrow. So we'll talk to Graham tomorrow instead. Right now, Nick Tamaro, though, joins us. And considering how much action we've seen over the last two weekends, it's probably as valuable to dissect some results as it is to preview some potential outcomes. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. With that list of guests that you either have or are waiting on, and now you're talking to me, it's like one of these things is not like the other, right? It's like a big big letdown that people would have to listen to me rather than Hall of Fame trainers and people who actually make a difference.
Oh, listen, that's not true. The you're making a big difference. You're the now the morning line maker at Keeneland, and boy, who would have thought that being a morning line maker was worthy of such interest and conversation.
It's like the worst job of all time. But it you know, it's so funny that like people get very, very obsessed with it. And so, you know, look, we're all passionate, right? We're putting our money forward, and I would never, you know, I would never take that away from anyone. But just FYI, if you think I made a horse too high on the morning line and you're mad about it, make your own line. right? I mean, there are going to be times where I make them too low. There are going to be times where I make them too high. You know, it's going to happen with great frequency. And there was a horse that ran yesterday who I made 10 to 1 on the morning line, who went off 4 to 1. I bet the horse. She's still running. And I saw someone somewhere make a comment about the morning line. And I thought, yeah, you're right. I should have made her 50 to 1. Right, given the way she performs. But I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to handicap the race. I'm trying to handicap the public. So, yeah, Steve, you know, good as time as ever to let everybody know right now. I haven't said anything publicly about it, but I'm officially going to make the morning line for the Breeders' Cup as well. So that was ironed out over the weekend. And so, yeah, it'll be, hey, there's going to, now there's international appeal to mocking my morning line.
The international subject of derision.
I can't wait, right? Why not? Why not? Bring them on.
So great. It's so funny. And, you know, I'm funny because we'll start going over some results. The first race that I actually put up both Friday and Saturday, I found nice prices. And so I started the day, and I'm thinking, oh, good, this is going to be great. And then turned and then got my brains beat in from that point on. It's a maddening place in that regard. I found that horse, Mark of the Z, in the fourth on Friday, and then on Saturday, Embrace. I had Embrace, who paid $30, and I don't know if there's a worse feeling than hitting early and thinking, oh, it's going to be a great day, and then slowly the air gets let out of the balloon the rest of the day.
Yeah, had a little bit of that as well. You know, came back into town Saturday morning and so started to get kind of tied on and ran into similar situations and also getting alive in multi-race bets and ending up really cashing in and feeling like I made a dumb wagering mistake in the Joe Hirsch playing. I played 1-2 and 2-1 and then I played 2-all-1 and I didn't play any 2-1-all. Right, and the 57-60-1 shot runs third. I understand that that's a little bit of a random kind of situation where, you know, you're not always supposed to be playing that way, but I thought you could really throw a blanket over the balance of that field. And so I was lucky enough to be exact and do fine on the race, but, you know, there was an opportunity there to make quite a bit more money. So, yeah, one of those days, and I mean, look, Keeneland it's very much like Saratoga in that you are just drawn in by the big fields and the competitive racing, and I mean these races are very, very tough, and let me tell you, Wednesday is no change, and so far through Thursday I don't see anything different. These fields are loaded, and it's a great test of not only your handicapping skill but your bankroll management, because you could find yourself overextending very easily trying to cover the right combinations in a multi-race bet and or finding horses that you want to bet that present value in any kind of intra-race pool.
You know, there's also, and we can utilize a race from Friday. It was Friday because I just discussed it with Mark Cassie. There was a race Friday at Keeneland, and there was a race yesterday at Aqueduct as part of the Pick Six. In fact, the first leg. The race on Friday I'm talking about is that maiden race where. You know, I was very familiar with Brighter Days Ahead of Joe Sharps coming out of the Instant Coffee race. And I had picked Brighter Days Ahead at Saratoga with Instant Coffee. And so here's Brighter Days Ahead, who ends up scratching and felt like a pretty major lean. And then, of course, yesterday in New York, we dealt with Unlimited Potential, who, you know, you start handicapping that carryover sequence, Nick, and you say to yourself, okay, great, it's a pick five. I'm going to lean on Unlimited Potential. And then, you know, 2-3 hours later, there's no Unlimited Potential. And there was, you know, no potential after getting knocked out in the first leg. So the evaluation here is how to reboot your mindset. I mean, this also gets into horses coming in off the AE list, and it all fits in that same catch-all.
Yeah, and right, and the, you know, the difficulty there, especially with Unlimited Potential yesterday, is that it went from a race, as you mentioned, that seemed like one that would have had a pretty stone-cold single to one where there really was not even a defined second choice. And I think Matt Doyle going off the second choice was a little bit surprising, but Southern Flag is just kind of a plug, and he doesn't seem to have any desire to win. So, that really is exactly what made the difference. And I think the challenge being that we, as horse players, want to, in a sequence like that, you want to make it as easy on yourself as possible while understanding at the same time that pick sixes are about survival. You're not trying to formulate opinions and bet a pick six around it. So that was a very tricky leg, no doubt about it. But, yeah, the approach to yesterday's pick six sequence when you were handicapping the night before, the morning up, pre-scratch, to me was that you were going to single Unlimited Potential and you were going to single Sweet Mystery in the seventh. And you would kind of want to work around the other legs. And, you know, I liked King Cause in the Knickerbocker, and I thought the Futurity was basically a four-horse number. I was going to use 1, 2, 3, 7, and, you know, I didn't play the pick six yesterday just because I didn't want to delve into the pool, wade into the pool of the sharks with, you know, that first leg being one that I didn't really have a good feel for, even though, in retrospect, Watasha made a lot of sense, and, yep, and I probably should have given him way more consideration. I felt foolish afterwards. But, yeah, and then, of course, you get to the nightcap, and you feel good about having weaved your way through the sequence, and then Matty Rowland wires the field at 52-1 with a horse that, you know, kind of came out of nowhere. So, again, underscoring the difficulty of wagering effectively and having things break your way, which is obviously easier said than done.
Exactly. There were countless evidence of this. Listen, there's evidence of it all the time, but this weekend it kind of really came into some focus. Let's stick with Keeneland, because obviously you're looking through these fields with a fine tooth comb, making the line. Going back to Friday, and I don't know if you saw the tweet, but James Scully on Friday with his LSFP, the last second Friday push, he made a tremendous case for Manny Wah. And we're going to talk after Nick, we're going to talk to the Catman, Wayne Catalano. So here's Mrs. Moulton's Will Take Charge 6-year-old. And boy, is it possible that the Catman is ready to do it again in the sprint.
Yeah, Aloha West, I think, maybe took some by surprise getting as good as he did late last year. Manny Wah's form is, I think it would suffice to say, is a little bit more exposed, but doesn't mean that he's not a horse with some ability. And, you know, it's the sprint division's funny, right? It's after Jackie's Warrior, it's made up of a lot of pretty, you know, decent to mediocre-ish type horses. And why can't somebody step up and make a little bit of noise? Obviously, this is a horse that has generally always performed well at Keeneland. He's gotten into form of late, and, you know, I don't see why he certainly couldn't be a placing chance. He'd probably have to improve to win, but his best races put him in the mix for maybe a bit of a tri-spot or something along those lines.
Well, Manny Wah at 17.57-1. In fact, it's funny. You know, here was a race where, you know, you started with Sibelius, and, you know, then there were a couple of somewhat likely suspects in Special Reserve and Necker Island who were probably top of mind, you know, in terms of recency. And I'm a sucker for Top Gunner, who I just keep thinking is going to win one of these. So I'm on Top Gunner, and I get these two strangers, Manny Wah, and I mean, Long Range Toddy is just he's Long Range Toddy's like he's one of those horses that you just look up at and you're like, why is he here? And you know, interjecting himself at 20-1 in your trifecta. It's like, you got to be kidding.
Indefatigable, I think, would be the word for him.
Right? That's a good word, good word.
He is the one that you can't, he just seems to never tire out. And, yes, second time this year he's outrun expectations at Keeneland. So he's an interesting case as well. But, yeah, this is, you know, as these horses run against each other frequently enough, you see them and you think you've got a line on how they're going to perform, and then things get totally turned upside down, right? It's not unusual for it to be a totally different ball game when all is said and done. And I think this this result went a little bit that direction.
For those that haven't seen the paper and didn't look at this race, let's see. Long Range Toddy beaten 9 1/4 in a money allowance at Churchill last, beaten 33 lengths when last in a mile race at Kentucky Downs. That was his first and presumably the only turf try of his career. He was beaten 13 in the Vanderbilt when sixth and last. Third, fourth, sixth, second, eighth. I mean, beaten 2, 13, 2, 12, 14. And then he gets beat a neck here at 20-1. It's like one of these horses that you say to yourself, you know, I understood the Maniwa third off the layoff, and there were you know, James made a very coherent case. So, Long Range Toddy is just impossible for me to have in that second slot if I'm building a tri ticket, which I did with Top Gunner, and it's just maddening. I mean, to go, you know, 4x3x1 in a reverse tri key, and you know, everything works. Top Gunner ends up third in this case. And I don't have this. I mean, it's unbelievable. Tri paid $800 for 50 cents.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the scenario. It's hard to, and when you're trying to, you know, I look at the reverse tri key strategy as a little bit of a clever way to play. And I think when you're doing that, you know that you're always running the risk of having things break improperly. Meaning that, you know, you're going to have them go a direction that you can't afford and you can't expect. So that's the challenge as it comes up. And, you know, this is a great example of it because it was hard to have those two on top, even if you have a good, clever horse in the third spot.
Well, but here's the flip side. If you go all Top Gunner, it's a $21 play. $21.
Right. It's a bit of, it's an irresponsible bet, but it costs $21. I agree. I mean, it's not. Go ahead.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. I see irresponsible bets on the internet every day, and people fawning over them, and it'll make you crazy.
Yeah. No. I don't disagree with that. It's a. You know, it's a short-term, long-term thing, right? Long-term, you're going to be in trouble if you're making $21 trifecta bets where you're keying a 14-1 shot in third. But in this case, it would have worked out swimmingly, right? And then you would have also needed a heap of racing luck because you have a horse that seemed home and cooled out at, inside the eighth pole and somehow ran third. So, look, I've made my fair share of irresponsible bets over the years, no question about it. But the efficiency with which you bet trifecta, and I will admit, Steve, too, and I mean, look, I'm somebody who's on the record as having had a particularly big day with contests and stuff with trifectas. My trifecta betting has really, really, really scaled back. I don't do nearly as much of it anymore, in large part because I feel like I'm at a huge disadvantage with a lot of the CAW money in the pools. They bet so efficiently. I can't always compete with that. And I found myself worrying way too much about who was third and maybe missing some good exact opportunities. But of course I could go on a tangent about that. So, I mean, it's a question of making sure that you're in the pool the right way. And if you have an interesting horse like Top Gunner, no doubt about it, you know, it can get frustrating. But this was one where, unfortunately, you had a good opinion. It was just really hard to get to those two horses on top of them.
Well, and I mean, the horses I used were, you know, Sibelius, Necker Island, and Special Reserve, and I threw in Maniwa as an interesting late runner that I thought, okay, you know, especially when James talked the way he did, and four by three, it's a nothing little ticket. We talk about this reverse tri key, the Kenny Kirchner betting strategy, and for Breeders' Cup, actually, you know, Nick, I mean, to be fair, I don't want people to get to Breeders' Cup in a few weeks and, you know, be afraid to go 7x6x1 for $21. I mean, if you do that 14 times, for $300 on the weekend, if you hit one, you're gonna be very happy. So, you know, it is a strategy that we've discussed and tried to offer people as a small budget alternative. I mean, you don't have to go 7x6. You can go 5x4, and it's a $10 ticket. So, I mean, there's lots of ways.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No, it's a strategy I've used in the past. I would not discourage anybody from trying it. There's a lot of long shots that you might think really that their ceiling is running third in the Breeders' Cup.
Exactly.
There's 9 supers in the Breeders' Cup as well. I mean, there's not in the Breeders' Cup betting challenge, but those are opportunities that you want to take to get a long shot in the mix and maybe, you know, make yourself a decent little tri play that builds up with some price sources.
Let's group together, Nick, for conversation purposes, and I suppose we should include in here any thoughts you've got. We should throw the Vosburgh result in as well, and as I mentioned earlier, Elite Power, originally a 96 buyer, but Andy has kicked it up to a 105. He reevaluated the Vos, and it's now a 105. That, of course, in New York. We talked last week to Mark Glatt about how be it, that win when it came to the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. Obviously, here's Jackie's Warrior laying in wait for what feels like a lot of cannon fodder at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it boils down to what gets done with Jack Christopher, right? I mean, in terms of who might really present the biggest challenge. Those of us that are in the camp of just, you know, the total namby-pamby, the wet blankets that don't think the Jackie's Warrior is, you know, is as good as Housebuster, then, we probably are just, you know, we're waiting to see who ends up running against him, understanding that we might have some real interest in betting on that horse. So it does look like these last round of sprint preps have been decidedly underwhelming. Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, this division's been pretty weak all year. There's a reason why Jackie's Warrior has been so successful. And I would imagine Bill Mott's going to run Elite Power in the sprint. I mean, the Vosburgh going to 7/8 is a little tricky because it obviously brings in a miler type. This is a two-turn mile, and Cody's Wish, I believe, is going to the mile. So I would imagine that Mott will want to run Elite Power there. And, you know, I think he'll be interesting, right? Anybody that's in there that can push Jackie's Warrior along a little bit. One thing that is very, very clear, however you feel about Jackie's Warrior in terms of historical significance or anything else, and however much you want to wax poetic about his great ability, one thing that you can't deny is that he is a vastly different horse when he's pressured on the front end. And he is not as good a racehorse when he's pressured on the front end. So, you know, if that ends up being the situation, then we all want to take notice of the likelihood that he doesn't run well. So that's, you know, that still remains to be seen, and hopefully when the field comes together, we'll get a better sense of it.
Let's get to the Jessamine and the Bourbon. Let's do them both. We'll have Wayne Catalano follows Nick, and we actually can tie in everywhere else. There, we pretty much between the Zuma Beach and the Surfer Girl yesterday, and fold in the New York result from last week. We can talk a little bit about the juvenile turf divisions, Nick. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be, they're all going to face off against some Euros. We'll get to that, you know, as it firms up. But last week, I haven't talked to Shug yet about Pleasant Passage, and there was Major Dude for Todd. We talked the other day. Then he had in California this weekend, Paxel Wallop, who really did win, pretty much as he pleased, Comanche Country for D'Amato. Paxel Wallop is Mullins. And then, of course, in these two spots, Delight Wire to Wire for Jonathan Thomas and George Strawbridge. And then yesterday, Catman with the Oscar performance under Pratt in the Bourbon.
Yeah, you know, I mean, touching on some of those, I thought that the training job, and you can feel free to tell Wayne Catalano this, the training job on In the Winter is hats off, because I wouldn't have given a plug nickel for that horse beyond a mile after the With Anticipation. Yeah, perfect trip. He looked absolutely loaded at the eighth pole, and he just came up empty. I think Flavian Pratt gets an assist there, too, for really riding the pace scenario very astutely. But it's clear that Wayne Catalano, who people may forget because he doesn't have as many horses as he used to, is still a damn good trainer. That he really found a way to get some stamina into this horse, and it made all the difference in the world. So hats off to him, and obviously there's been an advantage in two prior runnings of the Breeders' Cup to having some local form on the turf. I guess I shouldn't really say that, because I know that Aunt Pearl won the Juvenile Fillies turf back in 2020, but I don't believe Fire at Will had run it. Maybe he had run it, but he ran second in the Bourbon, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's an edge to having gone over the surface. I'll tell you what, we sort of overlook them every year, but the two California two-year-old turf horses, the winners over the weekend at Santa Anita, Paxawalop and Comanche Country, they're both good. They might not be good enough to win Breeders' Cup race, but they're both horses with talent, so I wouldn't shortchange them, and I'd give them some consideration as well. The New York contingent, Pleasant Passage, who you mentioned, I thought was a beneficiary of a pretty good set of circumstances in the Miss Grillo, and the pace was just exceptionally slow, and it was a really underwhelming effort from Be Your Best, who had looked really good at Saratoga, and I think, unfortunately, it looks like that group of horses that had run against each other at Saratoga in the race that Pink Hue won, boy, Pink Hue looked like a really good horse. I think it's unfortunate she's gotten injured, but all the horses that she faced have now come back and run well. Zajera broke her maiden in her next start, ran well in the dirt, and Delight won the Jessamine. So, yeah, there's a lot to look forward to there when she finally gets healthy again. But for Breeders' Cup purposes, it looks in many ways like we'll get a decent sense of what the European contingent looks like. I know the names that I've seen for the juvenile turf, if Aidan O'Brien ends up bringing them over, Blackbeard being the one that sticks out the most, if that horse comes, then our horses are going to need, they're going to need to really step up.
Yeah, we went over. Did we go? Was this Marcus's division? I can't remember. There's a wait and watch about Mysterious Knight, who of course won well, like all the Applebees do at Woodbine. Another O'Brien, Auguste Redan, won the Champions Juvenile at Leopardstown, and. Who else you mentioned? Oh, Holloway Boy for Carl Burke. Meehan's got Isaac Shelby out of a Newmarket win. My God. Proud and Regal for Donica O'Brien. One was second in the Carat. On and on. So the Euros, well, what's our tradition? The Euro boys are tough, and the Euro fillies get upset.
Yeah, that's generally been the case. I think the last Euro filly to win was... was the one that I bet, the only ticket I cashed in the 2012 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. Flotilla? Is that the last Euro filly to win?
Flotilla? Wow.
I think that was the funny. Last one. I mean, I'm trying to go by my back of the napkin calculation, but I'm thinking Pizza Bianca on Pearl. 2019 was Grand Motion's filly sharing. 18 was Newspaper. 17 working backwards, Juvenile Fillies Turf Rushing Fall, New Money Honey, Catch a Glimpse, 2014, I don't think I did any good in it, but oh, it was Wesley won the Juvenile Turf. Yeah, I think that was it. That was the last one. But again, the Euro boys, as you're saying, have done really well over time, hit it a bomb in 15 at Keeneland and a couple of other winners along the way. 19 was 18 was Appleby, 19 was Structor, and in the best ride of Jose Ortiz's career prior to Pizza Bianca. So yeah, the Euro boys have done very well, and I mean, I don't think that has really anything to do with more than Chad Brown's had a lot of good two-year-old turf fillies, right? I mean, that's part of the reason why we've kind of held our own, and when he doesn't have a particularly strong lot, I think we're a little bit more vulnerable, especially because it doesn't look like there's an Aunt Pearl out there. So it'll be an interesting race, and those always spice up Friday quite a bit for me. They're fun races.
You know who was one another Euro winner of in the Philly side was Cressilium.
Cressilium, she won the year after Flotilla, right? Exactly. 13.
Yes. Yes.
Testa Rossi was second, and I was convinced that Testa Rossi was going to be an excellent horse, and she's not. And her first son to race ran yesterday or Saturday, I think, at Aqueduct in the 40 maiden claimant.
Oof. Let's talk about the main track juveniles and plenty of intrigue and interest. And, of course, when it came to the futurity, that was some fascinating shoulder-to-shoulder confrontation between Loggins and Forte, and I was really dubious. I mean, I used Forte as a B because I didn't like. We had a mutual friend who may have talked me into being skeptical.
I see where you're going with that.
So that's what I'm. Yeah, that's what I'm going with. But Loggins ran great, and I am going to reiterate the need. I know Brad Cox won't be happy, but I think it's important that Robbie Messina gets Loggins at some point in his career, just so we can say Loggins and Messina. And I guess that's gonna go over the head of some people of a certain age, Nick. I'm just realizing.
Oh, I was dying. I love Kurt Becker, and I think Kurt Becker is just an outstanding man and announcer. And I was just waiting for him to just bellow out as loud as possible that Forte has moved into the danger zone.
there's no shortage of fun here. Actually, you know, both, and I didn't see where this was played up much, but and I know the figs were, you know, there's 10-point difference in the figs, but you did have, you know, two very contentious finishes in both the girls and the boys race. I mean, Forte and Loggins, and we just talked to Cassie, Wonder Wheel, Chop Chop was making great progress late, and of course Raging Sea ends up, you know, being knocked down a peg, but she ran okay.
Yeah, so first of all, on the topic of the boys, Cave Rock looks extremely good. We're going to talk about Cave Rock in a minute. Loggins and Forte both look to me like very, very solid grade one type of horses. I don't think there is as big a chasm between Loggins and Forte and Cave Rock as some might think. I do think the concern with the fillies is that Wonder Wheel won, and she is obviously very dangerous, but she looked like she was getting very, very tired late. And I think that would be my big concern with her. She did all the heavy lifting, no denying it. She did the hard work. But I think there would have to be some amount of worry about just how far she wants to go and whether she might be able to withstand some pressure on the front end. That being said, I mean, she has delivered now every time she's run. And you have to give a horse, especially a lightly raced horse, a little bit of an acknowledgement for consistency. So I do admire the fact that she really, she puts her boots on and goes out and fights every time. So it was a good pair of races in that sense. And yeah, I mean, the Loggins and Forte stretch drive was just incredible, and how they end up stacking up against Cave Rock really will end up being one of the more interesting questions of the Friday slate.
Well, and since we're doing this by division, let's get your thoughts about Cave Rock, and we obviously got to fold in and Tell Me No Lies, and I don't want to take away from her win in the Chandelier, but it does feel like the West Coast Phillies are cut beneath the rest of the regions of the country right now. But we've said that before, actually, historically, and they've performed okay, so we shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't make a blanket judgment. But Cave Rock, however, is you know, looking like one of these, you know, good, exceptional Baffert 2 year olds at this time of year that just is going to be imposing.
Yeah, just a horse who's ahead of the curve and looks like he's very competent and very, very talented. And so, yeah, I mean, he should be really tough to handle. I would think that with any kind of performance similar to what he's put forth now a couple times, you know, he'll take a lot of beating. And you wonder, you look to try and find what might be, you know, a little bit of an angle against him. And you will, of course, the first inclination is to question the competition. But, I mean, are you really certain that horses like Hijazi and some of those other Bafferts he's been running against aren't also pretty good? I'm not. I mean, I think they might be very good. So, and even the runner up, National Treasure, looks like a perfectly fine horse. So, yeah, he looks pretty dominant. I would imagine that, you know, if we see, generally there's not really any European participation in this race, and I think we'll probably be hard pressed to get 10 in there against him. I would imagine Cave Rock will be the shortest morning line favorite, not named Flight Line. of the entire weekend. So I think I could influence that as well, if necessary. But yeah, he looks pretty tough to handle, in my opinion. It'll be interesting to see who, you know, if Loggins and Forte both go. I assume they will. I don't see why they wouldn't. It'd be disappointing if they didn't. But yeah, I mean, they're gonna have to really run to beat this horse, because he looks like a pretty exceptional talent at this point.
There's one interesting little sidebar here that I find unusual, and until I looked at this, because I did a lot of this particularly for Keeneland, for the juvenile races at Keeneland this weekend. Baffert, for all of the, you know, precocious types and all the Del Mar Futurity wins and all that kind of stuff, and the Norfolks and I don't know, American Pharaohs, you know that Baffert has never won the juvenile 2 years in a row.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Listen to this. This is amazing. His first was with Vindication in 2002. Then he didn't win again until 2008 with Midshipman. Then it was another 5 years, New Year's Day. American Pharaoh, you could sort of assume, I don't know if you would have assumed he was going to win in 14, but he obviously couldn't run. So maybe, you know, maybe he would have won back-to-back juveniles in 14. But it took until 2018 to get Game Winner, and then another 3 years to get Corniche. It's a somewhat surprising record.
It is. He's also had a pretty limited number of starters at Keeneland. It's just not a place that he's really supported quite as much as some of his other, as a place like Churchill, but in the past at least. So yeah, that's an interesting stat. Maybe a little bit more random than you would think, but still interesting, no question.
Yeah, I expected. I don't know. I don't know why. I mean, you just would have expected maybe a couple more, and certainly a back-to-back winner. It's funny to say he's only won five.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Right?
His numbers with 2-year-olds over the years are just incredible. I mean, some of the things that he's done, some of the sheer number of races that he's won, it really is amazing.
On the juvenile filly front, should expand beyond the ones this weekend, right? Go back to Chocolate Gelato last week, and boy, what a fall championship season for T. Pletch.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Todd Pletcher's barn has really been a good year for his stable, no question about it. They've been very good, and obviously now he has the power of a client like Mike Rapoli buying a number of high priced horses every year, and so I think Todd is going nowhere for sure. I mean, he's going to be very much in the thick of things for a while, especially in what could have otherwise been kind of the twilight of his career. I mean, it's hard for people to remember that Todd Pletcher's been winning big races for 25 years. So it's he's had a really, really nice run, and it's good to see that he's pretty much represented in just about every major division. So it'll be an interesting end to the fall season for him as well. But Chocolate Gelato looks like a horse that will be she could probably be the morning line favorite for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies at this point. I don't see a whole lot of alternatives, and she backed up her nice win in a maiden race with that score. And so, yeah, I mean, it's no surprise there. Todd Pletcher's another one that's had tremendous success with 2-year-old fillies.
Nick, out of curiosity on that topic, how much weight will you give Wonder Wheel and even Chop Chop to a degree? I mean, the figs came back on a fairly level, 83 for Gelato and 81 for Wonder Wheel and Chop Chop. How much extra weight do you give the performances on the host track when putting this line together, do you figure?
You know, depending on who it is and whether it's, you know, like, do you think, I mean, I'll tell you this right now, I'm going to make Malathot the favorite in the staff. And one of the reasons why I'm going to do that is that I think when Malathot's PPs are stacked up against Nest, she looks like a better horse, and she's 3-for-3 at Keeneland. So I think that matters. Nest is also 1-for-1 at Keeneland with a blowout win. I just think that having that local race that was basically as good as Nest's final prep does matter. I think with the two-year-olds, if you're talking about level figs, I think you would probably give a little bit of a nod to the horse that did it locally. I think it's important to take their performances as a whole, obviously, and look at them that way. But, yeah, I would say, you know, if there are circumstances where a click's worth, maybe, you know, you might make a horse 7-2 instead of 4 because they've run particularly well at Keeneland. I don't think that's unfair.
Well, I'm seeing a tweet out here, actually, Nick. Morning line maker for Breeders' Cup Keeneland, NTAM 1215, reveals he will make Malathot the distaff favorite.
You have to say that. I think I will at this point.
I'm my own publicist.
What I was going to do to have some fun with everybody on Twitter, because Twitter needs some levity at times, is I was going to pull up the PPs for Nest, Malathot, and Clairiere and put them against each other and say, you know, what does everybody think happens when these three face off? And Clairiere is a horse that has been completely and totally forgotten. Absence has not made the heart grow fonder with her. It has made everybody pretty much forget that she exists. And, you know, before Malathot and Nest were out there battling, Clairiere was the one that was beating Malathot. Before Malathot was out there winning, I should say. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of an interesting case in that respect. So, I'll have a little bit of fun with that, and then by all means, tweet away.
Thank you, because there it goes. although once it's published, you have 30 minutes to make any edits. So, in case you change your mind,
that's the new Twitter blue policy. Yeah, there you go.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I actually was able to change my attachments earlier this morning before anybody woke up. I should mention, by the way, I see where Dave Grenig, I did not see the figures from Aqueduct, but Dave put them up about an hour ago. And Ness got a 101 winning the Beldame, and Nagarok an 82. We'll talk to Grand Motion tomorrow. King Cause a 98 in the Knickerbocker. And if you hadn't seen the number, Malathot a 98 in the Spinster, and you know, for those that, you know, that always morning line makers that mention how, you know, the figs can influence, there's the last race buyer people will be looking at least will show Nest with the biggest number.
Yep, Nest will have the biggest number, and I think the question will be who has faced the best competition, and how much do people worry about Nest running against horses that are likely significantly better than anything she's ever faced. So that's pretty. I mean, handicapping that race, that's almost exactly what it comes down to, right? Is how comfortable are we with horses that Nest is facing that are just a lot better than anything she ever has before.
Nick, let's throw in. Let's see. Let's do some turf. Some turf questions and turf performances. What'd you make of the mile of the Coolmore Mile?
You know, speaking of Todd Pletcher, of course. I mean, this has been a pretty darn good training job of Annapolis, who he tried in all the right races. He's really made just every good decision you could make with Annapolis. And the reason I say that is because the horse has been in the right race every single time, right? He tested deep waters in the Saratoga Derby at the right time. He went ahead and cut him back at that point to get him into a race that suited him a little bit better. So, yeah, just a big, big fan. I'm a big fan of the way they've campaigned that horse. And he got a great ride the other day, and he has absolutely no chance against Modern Games. So just, I hate to be blunt about it, but modern games and other horses that come over are just going to be, they look like they'll be way too much for anybody in our mile division. We've got some horses that are really admirable, some hard triers like Ivar and a couple of the others that ran credibly in the Coolmore Turf Mile, but it looks like modern games and maybe some of the other ones that I've seen mentioned, they look like they'll be a little much. So at the same time, I mean, there's no reason for any connections not to try. They should be trying because you never know what could happen on the day. But with Charlie Appleby's record of success here over the last couple of years and modern games running the way he did at Woodbine, understanding at the same time, Appleby's horses at Woodbine have been just a little bit better than they've been everywhere else. He should be tough. But yeah, hats off to Annapolis. Of course, I would really want to talk about is Warlike Goddess. And you know, yes. a dear mutual friend of ours is going to have to come to grips at some point. He's going to get mad at me for doing this, but he's going to have to come to grips at some point with his bad opinion on Warlike Goddess. And so he's kind of poo-pooed her a lot. But, and I said to him after her last race, like, she's never beaten anybody. I said, you know, Love's Only You is basically an international superstar. And she ran the best race against her and lost by a neck last year. So Warlike Goddess was beating. The other thing is that when you're beating horses like Virginia Joy or you're running against Virginia Joy, and even though she beat her last time, and you know, you're running through horses like that, those horses, those races in so many ways are made for how they're run. You know, and when they unfold in such an extreme scenario, the results can get a little skewed and you can get a little confused by them at times. She put it all together the other day. Now, that being said, our older turf male division stinks, right? I mean, it is beyond its expiration date. It's over. They've had a good run. It's going to be great to see a new batch of horses come in next year and give us a chance to, you know, to really sink our teeth into some new ones. Because, you know, Gufo is a multiple grade one winner, and you know, that's that. But Warlike Goddess exposed all of them, and it was a really good ride on Saturday. And she will be overbet in the Breeders' Cup. There's no question about it. She will be horribly overbet. I think a placing chance is probably her ceiling. But, you know, good for Mott and the connections to try her in an ambitious spot, in a winnable spot, and they got what they deserved.
Fair enough. You know, if we're gonna have this kind of conversation, too, I want to bring in Regal Glory. I mean, I haven't discussed, other than mentioning that In Italian was able to get the grade one first lady. But Regal Glory, what does Chad do with her? Why is she not a candidate for the boys?
Yeah, I think I agree. I would run her. I would actually run an Italian as well, and I'd just send an Italian to the lead. So, and see if she can't try and bottom them out. I mean, that course can get a little front end favoring at times in the fall. And I mean, look, she's been very, very good in her last two races. So is Regal Glory, maybe a little bit with circumstance. I don't think that Regal Glory has taken a step back. I really don't. I think she's run a race every time. And, you know, you never know what could happen in a scenario where you get a big field together and maybe some of the Euros that are well-backed get into some traffic trouble. And Regal Glory, I think, has very much earned her way into that race. So I agree with you completely.
Interesting. A couple of hybrid conversation points on the sprint side, Nick, and Golden Pal. Boy, like I said to Marcus on Friday, I think most people are waiting to try to beat Golden Pal in the Breeders' Cup, and he was like, "No, let's try to let's beat Golden Pal right here, right now." But that doesn't seem to be happening.
Yeah, he just fires every time, right? I didn't think he looked as good on Saturday as we've seen him in the past. I mean, to me, peak Golden Pal was that race in April. I mean, and maybe it was an odd turf course, maybe it was just a circumstance where, you know, he handled it and few of the others did. But I don't mean, he was very, very good that day. And he was very good on Saturday. So what you're never going to take away from Golden Pal is he has this unbelievably fast first step, and he can open up on the field so easily, and if he's able to do that in the Breeders' Cup, I mean, I know that that Highfield Princess is apparently coming over to run against him. I will admit that I'm unfamiliar with her. I will obviously do a lot of work on all these European horses over the next couple of weeks, and you know, we'll see how it ends up going. Keelan is the only site where a European-based runner has won a turf sprint since it was put in place. I believe that's correct. I don't think I'm I'm speaking out of turn on that, but he was just sort of routinely good the other day. He didn't open up the way he usually does. Poor Gear Jockey was really sacrificed to try and beat him, and probably ended up giving him the only opportunity, or giving away any opportunity to run in the money by chasing him so close. I mean, they went 21-1. So he'll be tough to handle, right? I don't see anybody out there that can really keep him honest early, and that would make him tough to beat.
Well, that's going to be frustrating for some of the people that are hoping for a pace that they can close into. Talk to Lee Einsiedler after Saturday. Lee is at this point now is a little concerned. The Casa Creed 0-3 at Keeneland, and that is a sand-based course that is not for everybody, and so you wonder. Lee's inclination was to take that Jaipur win in Urin and use it for the turf sprint. But again, if there's not going to be somebody testing softening up a Golden Pal, then I don't know. I don't know how anybody's going to is a candidate to pick him off late.
We're going to have to find Lee a rabbit for next year when he go down the hill at Santa Anita.
Well, they're not going.
Oh, they're not going to do the hill? They're going to do that straightaway?
Yes, that came to light last week with Mark Glatt on, and I reached out to the Breeders' Cup and was informed that they're running the 5 furlong.
No. Oh, yes. No. Oh, God. All right, I'll let that go because I could get frustrated. But anyway, as far as 2022 goes, yeah, it might be a situation where Casa's not as comfortable on the turf at Keeneland, right? I mean, he just might be a little bit better on that more lush, course up in New York. Courses up in New York. I don't think he ran badly at all.
I agree.
I think Saez was a little concerned about the speed horses getting away from him, and I do think that negated his advantage in a big way. He was in there fighting. He was in that scrum at the eighth pole, so he's actually a very interesting cutback. Boy, if there was a horse in there that you knew was going to push Golden Pal, it sure would be nice. He's a horse, another venerable horse in our mile division that seems to fire just about every time.
Who else is I'm sure in this same scenario, and I haven't mentioned. I mentioned in passing, with some of the results in the opening part of the show, Brendan Walsh with this Cazadero, who ran them all down, going 6. Which race was that? The Near Arctic? Yeah, the Near Arctic. Got a 101 buyer, Nick.
Yeah. Yeah, that horse has gotten good in a hurry, and obviously had been very talented from past exploits with Asmussen. I mean, people don't remember that Cazadero was favored in the Saratoga Special that was won by Jackie's Warrior in 2020. So he's a horse that's always been pretty good, and Brendan's such a good trainer. Really, really, I have always admired the work that he's done, and I think he's gotten this horse into exactly the right spots.
Finally, because we're going to pull up, and we got Wayne Catalano is going to join us, and Tom Ventura in hour 3, but the juvenile sprinting, and a couple of interesting players, and I reached out to Dan Lynch, Leach. I'm dying to talk to him about his win. He brings American Apple into New York and wins that Matron. Good for him. And I think plenty of people might have thought that American Pharoah was going to prove out to be a good turf sire, but I don't think that him being as good a turf sprint sire was on everybody's bingo card.
No, that's a fact. He has definitely been a very good turf influence, specifically in some of the sprint races. There, that's very, very true. And that horse got a really, really good. I rip on Eric Hansel like everybody else does way more often than I should, but he got a great ride. He gave that horse a really good ride and ended up getting the money. And it's pretty incredible hang job by the Clement horse that I bet there that was coming from the rail. But it was a fun race. And look, he'll get a spot in the Breeders' Cup now, and why not take a shot? That feels like a race that'll be as wide open as any.
Well, and we'll save a lot of the other stuff. And, Nick, the situation is fascinating because it takes on a whole new meaning when you and I do our Breeders' Cup morning line conversations. This time, it'll be like you're chiseling them in stone.
This time it's for real, my friend, no doubt about it. The Pace and morning line conversation on Tuesday, the 1st of November, which will be the 8-year anniversary of the last time I did good in the Breeders' Cup. Not quite, but close. will be a lot of fun.
So fun. Nick Tamara, everybody, and Tam 1215, and there's a big reaction to the news breaking tweet from earlier this morning here on At the Races. Nick, enjoy the day. We'll talk maybe month Friday.
Do the same, my friend. Talk to you then. Take care.
The great Nick Tavaro. So much fun. You could do anything with Nick. What a great hour. And we got a little bit more Friday. We had a lot of Breeders' Cup division discussion with the DRF crew. And now a little bit more. You got a little bit of a kind of a pecking order concept. And plus you got... we got controversy. No, it's not controversial. Let's take the top of the hour break. We're going to have a good third hour as well. And the Catman, always, always a welcome addition to any At the Races lineup. Catman next. Tom Ventura is going to join us from OBS ahead of the sale tomorrow and Wednesday. And Dan Leach confirms that he's joining us. Dan Leach, who came into New York with... the American Pharaoh and American Apple and wins the Matron. Yeah. Good job. It's great. We'll find out about it. Get a little backstory. Up close and personal. Dan Leach. Back after this, hour three at the races. It is, it's a federal holiday. Back after this.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is